You're listening to Interviews with Adam. I am your host, Adam Miller. And today, as we continue in our Missions Emphasis Month, we are talking with various ministries and missions organizations from around the world that are having an impact about knowing Christ and making him known. And today, we are joined by the Vice President of Global Training, Zane Pratt, for the International Mission Board for the Southern Baptist Convention. It's a great privilege to have him on our program today. Zane, thank you so much for being a part of our Missions Emphasis Month.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Well, why don't you get us started by telling us a little bit about the IMB? This is the branch of missions organization for the Southern Baptist Convention. We're in the Northeast. I know there are a lot of Southern Baptists here in the Northeast, although they might be a rare breed. But tell us a little bit about your organization and what you do.
Okay. Well, the International Mission Board was started in 1845. When the Southern Baptist Convention was first formed. That was actually the first action that the new denomination ever took. And as it stands right now, we have nearly 4,000 missionaries operating in most of the countries of the world. Our goals are specifically to share the gospel with those who have never heard it, to focus on unreached and unengaged people groups, and to go through a process then of engaging those who have not heard the gospel, sharing the gospel with them, discipling new believers, planting churches, and training leaders.
And this is actually, over the years, it's grown into a very huge sending agency with missionaries all over the globe. Can you tell us a little bit about the global reaching point that the IMB has?
Right. So we are on every continent. We have people who are either living in, or if that's not possible, assigned to try to reach every country in the world. Our goal is to see that in cooperation with other evangelical organizations that nobody gets left out in terms of hearing the gospel. So we literally are in every time zone and to be found pretty much anywhere you can go with the gospel.
And the primary function is evangelism and church planting. This has kind of morphed over the years for the IMB. Can you tell us a little bit about its current iteration of its purpose and planting churches and training nationals for doing mission work?
Right. So you can sort of trace through our vision statements through the years our growing understanding of what our mission is. At one time, it was simply sharing the gospel, and then it was evangelism that results in churches, and now our mission statement actually is that we partner with churches, meaning churches here in our sending base, to empower limitless missionary teams to make disciples and multiply churches among unreached people groups and places to the glory of God. And so we see now this full-orbed mission that doesn't just involve sort of hit-and-run evangelism, but that includes all the processes to leave behind a healthy, reproducing indigenous church that not only doesn't need our help anymore, but that actually will join us in the ongoing process of taking the gospel to those who've never heard it.
The value then of planting churches in, you know, every country in the world is because the purpose really of the IMB is to make sure that there is a gospel representation community, not just a missionary in those areas, but a community that can serve their own community, correct?
That's absolutely correct. We don't see ourselves as staying anywhere forever. In fact, our goal is certainly to work ourselves out of a job.
But how did you get involved working with the IMB to begin with?
It was through an interest in unreached people groups. It began when I was a student at Gordon Conwell Seminary in Massachusetts, and the head of our missions department at that time, Christy Wilson, was a huge advocate of taking the gospel to people groups that had no access to it. So through him, I got involved in an interest in missions. I had grown up in the Southern Baptist Convention. And so it was natural that as I sought an avenue to fulfill that sense of calling, I turned to this organization and found them to be a wonderful conduit for gospel witness around the world.
The IMB has had a tremendous impact, and it's exciting to see some kind of new things coming out of the International Mission Board. And of course, with David Platt, who I'm sure many of our listeners are familiar with, taking over as the president of the IMB, a lot of changes have taken place. Maybe our listeners would be interested in hearing about how this revitalization has come about in the process of the last several years.
Certainly. It's been a lot of fun having David here as our president. He brings a lot of energy to the task, and also he brings a church focus that I think we've always had but never emphasized enough. David is the first president we have had since World War II who did not come to the presidency from the mission field, as it were. He is pastor. He has a pastor's heart. He has a heart for local churches, and I think for too long we and many other missions agencies have treated the whole enterprise as we can do it, you can help, and now we're switching to talking to churches as you can do it, we can help, that we see the local church as certainly the best place for missionary preparation, because really when all is said and done, missionary preparation is just discipleship. Terry, to the specific focus on cross-cultural evangelism, discipleship, and church planning. So we want to both challenge and empower local churches here in North America to not think of missions as something they can outsource to a missions agency, but as something that they are charged by Christ themselves to be involved in, and then we exist to help essentially combine resources and have economy of scale so that a lot of churches together can do more than a single church by itself can do.
You know, as I listen to messages from David Platt, I hear the constant reminder of the unreached people groups, and it's hard for us to really wrap our minds around that unless it's presently in front of us on a regular basis. But there are so many different people groups out there that have not yet heard the gospel. This is a huge mission, a huge challenge. What is the IMB doing to address those groups where the IMB doesn't have missionaries yet or doesn't have organizations that are actually going to those people?
Right. So out of the 7 billion people in the world, at least 2.8 billion of them are parts of unreached people groups. Now, as a technical definition, we, together with pretty much the whole spectrum of evangelical mission agencies, have defined that as 2% or less evangelical. But for instance, there are parts of the world where Central Asia has no people group that has more than 0.1% evangelical Christians among them. And so that's the kind of numbers we're looking at. So as we think about unreached peoples, by and large, they're unreached because it's not actually possible to go to them openly as a missionary. And so there's a variety of things that we look to do to get the gospel to them. That can be everything from the use of internet, electronic media, to reaching those people who live in the diaspora populations. And so there may be a country where we can't go as a missionary, but those people live in communities outside of their country that we can reach. And then also challenging Christians who are not professional missionaries, but who have professional credentials, who are business people and engineers and scientists and others who can get legitimate jobs within countries where missionaries can't go as missionaries, but they can go as a businessman or an engineer or something like that, and challenging them to see that as a call from God to take the gospel where professional clergy could never go.
Now, you talk about under 2% evangelical, but it's also those who don't have access to a gospel-centered church or a church or a Bible or anything like that, because you've got to come up with a whole new classification when it comes to New England. We're on Cape Cod, it was rated 1.5% evangelical. and 49 of the counties here in New England are under 3% evangelical. So we're going to have come up with a whole new category here for the United States and how we gauge unreached people groups and the missions that we have here. But certainly when we compare it to the means and access to the gospel in some of these other countries, it is a staggeringly overwhelming statistic of those who have never even heard about Jesus Christ.
That is absolutely true. In fact, having been a pastor in New England after I graduated from Gordon-Conwell, I sometimes joked that I did that for 6 years, and then I needed to take a break and go do something easier, so I went to the mission field. I am certainly aware firsthand of the challenges you have in a place like that, where sadly people think they've tried Christianity, when the reality is that most of them have never heard a real gospel presentation, and in many areas within New England there are few Christians, but there still are Christians, and there are churches. There's some great churches in New England. And so we wouldn't call it unreached. We would call it horribly under-evangelized.
Yeah, it needs its own classification. But although that they may know about Christ or know about the church, it's likely that they've never actually heard the gospel proclamation, because their assumptions about Christ are certainly ones that have prevented them from going any further to hear a full explanation of the gospel.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. Oh, tell me a little bit about your role and your function with the International Mission Board, because you're a global trainer. What does that mean?
Okay. We view ourselves as having a training role really in three directions. One of those is toward the North American church. And so we want to provide resources for North American churches to help them understand missions better and engage in it more effectively. Then we also are responsible for training our own workers to help them be effective cross-cultural evangelists, church planters, and leadership trainers. And then the third focus we have is on training national believers, and particularly national leaders, to be able to lead their churches and train other pastors well. So those are the three sort of directions in which we face. And so we produce materials and for the North American church and work with our mobilization department to disseminate those. Then we directly train our own missionaries. And so as new missionaries are appointed, they go through an orientation and training process with us that extends through their first term overseas. Then we also are working on sort of continuing education training for missionaries to help keep them sharp throughout their career. And then we're working with our field teams for various ways that local church leaders can be trained, often in ways that are very different from what can happen in North America. When you're, for instance, in a high persecution environment, you're not going to build a seminary. When you've got pastors in areas that are very poor, you're not going to expect people to pick up their lives and move somewhere to go to school without employment. And so finding ways to take solid biblical training to pastors and other church leaders, rather than expecting them to come to us for it, and finding ways to do it with people who may be very intelligent but have never had the opportunity for advanced formal education. Those are the kinds of challenges we're working to address globally.
And what are some of the needs that you have? I know that there are some financial needs, and that is usually compensated by the many churches that are part of the Southern Baptist Convention, but there are also sending needs. So what are some of the challenges, the needs for prayer and support that your ministry needs?
Well, as we produce materials, you're certainly aware from your ministry that it's not as simple as you write something or record something, and then the job is done. There are a number of production costs that are involved in creating new materials. We are exploring ways to use online training that often can jump over barriers that otherwise we physically can't cross. and also can be much more financially feasible for people if we can provide stuff online. That's a whole new world and gives us whole new possibilities for the ways that we can do training. So those are some of the things that we're working on right now. In terms of personnel needs, I would simply say that with billions of people having never heard the gospel, while I don't believe that God has called every North American Christian to go overseas right this minute, I can't help but think that he's called more than are actually going. And one of my concerns is that our default seems to be God has called me to stay where I am unless he basically beats me over the head or does some skywriting to tell me to go somewhere else. Our default should be the other way around. If there are more Christians and more churches and more Bibles in North America, which has 7% of the world's population, than the entire rest of the world combined, if in fact, as a statistic I heard decades ago that I believe is still true, 90% of the full-time Christian workers in the world are here on this continent, ministering to the most evangelized 7% of the world's population, then our default should be to go where we're needed more, unless God clearly directs us to stay where we're needed less.
A great challenge and a great reminder. I'm glad that you brought that up. There are certainly more people who can and should go into the mission field to support the gospel proclamation. And for those who can't go, we have an obligation to support those who do go to do the work that they have been called to do. We have been talking with Zane Pratt, who is the Vice President of Global Training for the International Mission Board. If you would like to find out more information about their ministry and the collection of ministries under the Southern Baptist Convention, please head over to our website at songtime.com or simply give us a call. It is 508-362-7070. Zane, thank you so much for joining us and for having a heart for New England, having served here some time in the pastorate. Thank you for your prayers, your support, but also for the work that you do with the Mission Board at the Southern Convention.
And thank you very much for your ministry in New England. It's a place that will always be near to my heart.
We hope you enjoyed this interview made possible by our ministry at Songtime Radio. You can find out more information about our ministry by visiting our website at songtime.com, where you can find this and other interviews on our podcast series, as well as our weekday broadcast, which includes teaching, interviews, and music. We also want to encourage you to sign up for our free monthly newsletter. It's got encouraging articles, and there is no obligation. To find out more information about our ministry, again, visit our website at songtime.com. This ministry is made possible by people just like yourself. We are 100% supported by our listeners. So if you have been blessed today, why not join with the many voices together for that one message, the gospel of Jesus Christ, with your donation to the Songtime Ministry. To make a donation, you can do so online at our website at songtime.com, as well as by mail. Write to us at Songtime Radio, P.O. Box 100, Barnstable, Massachusetts, 02630, or give us a call. Make a donation over the phone. It's 508-362-7070. On behalf of our entire Songtime staff and our own Dr. John DeBrine, the founder here at Songtime, who encourages you to grow in grace and not groan in disgrace, from Cape Cod, I'm Adam Miller. God bless.